meeting of the Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District on the 21st of May 2018 at 10 a.m. Present today on the telephone is Gary Erdang, also on the, from, he's in, out of town, Florida. Bob Barrett, out of town, is it Greenland, Iceland, some land?
Ireland.
Ireland, okay. I knew it had a land in it. Mark Scritel, Kerry Gibson, I think we're a full body today. We have Rachel here, Kerry, Roy, and we also have, thank you, R. Blake Hamilton from Durham, Jones, and Pinneger. We welcome you here. At this time, it's time for public comment. Having no public, unless any of you would like to comment, none being recognized, we'll move to item C on our agenda, which is approval of consent items. I'll read those for the record, which are requests for approval of district bills to be paid. Warrants 374394 in the amount of $80,376.38. Item two is a request for approval of the minutes for the meeting held on March 26, 2018. And item three is a request for approval of the minutes for the meeting held on April 23, 2018. Entertain any comments or also a motion on that.
I move that we approve the consent item.
I have a motion by Mr. Barrett or Trustee Barrett.
I second.
Trustee Scritel as a second. Any other discussion? None being heard, then call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? I'll consider that vote to be unanimous based on our electronic thing here. The next one is item number D, Lake Delta, as a attorney Rachel Anderson. Discussion and or action on opinion of feasibility letter for developments in Powder West subdivision phases based on Summit's development agreement. Ms. Anderson.
So I spoke with Roy on Friday afternoon, and I think that this was meant to actually cover the Sundown and Powder Ridge. Is that correct?
Okay. There it is.
And I reviewed these in light of the, what I understood was the concern was the Kobe easement agreement that we have, not necessarily the development agreement. Because of the limitations in that agreement that we have regarding use of capacity for the Kobe well. From what I can gather though, based on the information I have, is that the district would not violate that agreement by serving existing obligations of the district. And it appears that both of these are long-standing existing obligations of the district. So, whereas that agreement had some limitations there about not using the water for new condos and that kind of thing, isn't implicated when it was an existing obligation. So I think the question given to me was whether we can charge standby fees on these units and issue feasibility letters as needed, and I feel like that's going to be fine. In my conversations with Roy, we discussed the difference moving forward of what we see as being a feasibility letter versus a will serve letter, whereas feasibility is more, yes, it's feasible to serve you, but we're not obligating ourselves on capacity of the water until we get to the will serve phase. And that makes sure that we don't violate anything with the state. I know we'd be concerned about Division of Drinking Water.
Yeah.
Because we don't have our second source yet. So based on that kind of conversation and moving forward in that direction with the difference between feasibility and will serve, I feel comfortable with that. And in our conversations, we've also talked about how that any right that they had based on the approval from the county for these platted obligations doesn't include necessarily that they pay their impact fees. So we will still be charging impact fees at the time that they get building permits, just which is going to be standard procedure moving forward. Mm-hmm. In my discussions with Roy, the thought was we just need to have a very clear operating procedure moving forward and treating everyone the same way that way. and that if anyone feels that they have a very clear right that they've already paid an impact fee or whatever, I mean, of course, they're more than welcome to present that information to us, and we can assess that at that time and see if they have some right that we, you know, have not assessed or we're not aware of. And but to just be able to charge everyone consistently at the outset and deal with those kind of issues as they come up, that's kind of where we landed, I think.
Yeah, that's, and thanks, Rachel. And that's really important, because you know, having that consistency for Carrie to administer that when people are calling and questioning what they should do, it gives her a very clear direction and helps her to do her
and
job
I think,
better.
Yeah, we haven't had that in the past. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a consistent policy, and I think that that's something that you guys will be working on moving forward and understanding just the I mean, even just us having this conversation of what is a feasibility letter, what is a will serve, what do they accomplish, when do we do which, when do we charge the impact fee? And it, we're in a little bit of a tough situation because how things have been done previously, and I'm not talking just recent history, I'm talking the entire history of this district, has been not always very clear and very consistent. And so, unfortunately, we do have some wonky issues out there from the past, but I think moving forward, we have to just be consistent, and I think that'll help us out a lot.
My question is, it would seem to me that once we start accepting or we cash a payment, if we whether we have a will serve or not, if somebody's paying a standby fee, does that mean that we have a will serve agreement in place with them? What's our standby fee rate?
It depends on, well, that's something we've got to figure out, but right now,
just give me it.
Yeah, a ballpark figure, it's 102 for Summit's district, it's 88 for the old district, and if you just want preserve for just basic sewer, it's, what is it, 40, 39.
Okay, so if I wanted water and sewer, it's $88.
In the old district.
Okay, so if, let's say all of a sudden I bought a lot up there and I just sent you a check for $88 and you cashed it. Does that mean I'm guaranteed, and I keep paying you the $88? Does that mean that I'm entitled to get water?
It'd take more than just getting the check. If that check came to us, we would go back and look at who they were. If they had approvals from the county, we'd ask them to sign up for a service.
So you wouldn't necessarily just cash the check. Because to me, once you took the money, we're on the hook.
Right.
Now that takes me to the question of the legal part. So once we cash the check, is the district on the hook?
They would certainly have more rights than others. It's levels of rights here. But from my understanding, the way I've discussed it with Roy and others is that the purpose of the standby fee is, yes, to hold your right as a member of the district, and that we I don't want to say will serve, because that's what we're trying to define as a different thing. But for instance, like when Summit comes in, they came and proposed this big development, and we're like, okay, well, you need to develop water for that. We don't necessarily have the water for that. And it might be the same in other places. Like, yes, we can feasibly include you in our system, but at that, depending on, I mean, you could be wanting to develop now, you could be wanting to develop 10 years from now, and conditions are going to be different. And so 10 years from now, we're going to have to assess at that point, are you going to be able to hook into existing capacities, or are you going to have to build your own well, at which point we can give you a will serve at that point. But it does kind of hold your place in the district. I don't know if that's...
So I could be paying $88, again, for culinary and wastewater. I could be paying, or, you know, the ability to for sewer. I could be paying $88 for 10 years, and then you're going to reassess whether or not you're going to give me water.
Well, we'll reassess whether it's actually available, that we will serve you at that point, but...
Whether there needs to be more development in order to serve
you,
right?
Boy, I'm just too simple-minded here, but once I start paying for something, I want, and it tells me I'm going to get it. It just, from a moral...
Right.
Conversation, I think I should be entitled to get that.
Exactly, and this is probably where the whole rub comes in on everything, is that the district has to be prepared for you, assuming you're going to be hooking up. So that's the purpose of reservation or standby fees. And if somebody comes even with a preliminary plan, sometimes as we've seen these preliminary plans, the longest out 10, 15 years sometimes, and now they have contractual rights based on their approvals and things. So the district has to develop resources to plan for them someday. Some of these properties, or a lot of the properties, are investment properties. And so they may get their preliminary approval or their feasibility letter and then sit on that thing for a decade or so and then gift it to their kids or whatever they're going to do with it. But in the meantime, the district's moving along saying, okay, well, we have these number of ERUs that are going to need water, and we're planning for them, we're building infrastructure, we're assuming they're going to be hooking on to the system in some way. That all has to be done 20, 30 years in advance in order to be acting prudently, bonding and getting structure, infrastructure in the ground and everything else. And so it's important that we get that money at a point where we can actually do that planning, we can actually build the infrastructure for them. So that feasibility letter, personally, as far as I'm concerned, it's a smarter time to get it. They sign up, they need a document, of course, of some type to say that we're anticipating them being a member or a member of the district, and that we're collecting standby fees for those purposes. We're gonna include you, we're gonna be maintaining this infrastructure and this public entity for you. So many years from now, and you actually build your house.
It doesn't guarantee service necessarily.
Well, I still will serve as the more sure thing. That means we actually can hook you up.
Well, that was my question. Yes. If you've got, are we going to be tracking feasibility letters in conjunction with will serve letters, and feasibility is reserved capacity? Because otherwise, I think we are setting ourselves up for a pretty big legal dispute down the road if we get to the point where we're out of water. We have excess feasibility letters out there that people have been paying reservation fees for, and then they come time to build. I mean, like you pointed out, it's some of these are investment properties. Their investment could go to zero if they can't get water and sewer.
Yeah, so you have to plan for them. And really, this is part of the discussion here today is how and when do we do that? What's best? What's legal? Some of the properties have paid their fees. Maybe we pay an impact, wait until they have a platted lot, and you're pretty sure that they have something that's of value that they can pay on. You could have raw land sitting out there. Maybe the guy would assume he's got so many buildable lots, and now he wants to get so many, he wants a feasibility letter on those.
Part of our analysis here has been trying to mold what we do to help out with how the county is doing things and what they demand. I think that if we had our way, we wouldn't do feasibility letters at all. It would just be the will serve at the end. But what we're hearing from our constituents is, no, the county's telling us we need something right now. And we're saying, well, we can't give you that will serve yet. Our well isn't even built. So we don't even know. But they're like, well, we just need to get, moving forward. And we understand that that's not going to be there yet. And that's still going to be, condition in the future. What
the county's requesting that?
The count. That's what we've been told. Am I wrong? Is that they're requesting?
That's part of the development process. Is that we have to issue a feasibility letter so that the county can say, can you even do anything with these people? And so we do.
Where's your water coming from?
We're at that point,
we better start figuring this out.
We cannot give a traditional will serve at this point. We would just be killed with the Division of Drinking Water, among others. Yeah. And so this was an attempt for us to try to not delay. I mean, we've been frustrating developers because we've been saying no. And so we've been trying to let them get what they need to at least move forward, but protecting ourselves by not giving that final be all end all will serve until we actually do know that they're about to develop, and yes, we do have the capacity to serve them. So the issue of standby fees, I'm going to be honest, I didn't study the legality of that so much as I was studying the ability to do the feasibility letter. And that may be a policy decision of whether, I mean, from what I understand from Roy, you couldn't survive without those.
No, that is the O&M money for the district.
Yeah, I understand that. I just think we might need to consider essentially treating a feasibility commitment when they're paying standby fees almost the same as a will serve letter in terms of reserve resources.
Yeah.
Right.
Because otherwise I think that, you know, there is the real possibility that we could be in a similar situation where we are now, where we don't have developed infrastructure to support everything that we have commitments to support because of volume restrictions or whatever.
Yeah.
And someone goes to build and then they find out their investment is worthless.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so.
Right. And part of this is we're trying to deal with past, I mean, these things have been approved previously. So
right.
We're like, how do we help them out to be able to move forward and you know, and do those in capital improvements that they've already put all the investment in and already have approvals on. I would agree that moving forward, like, yeah, hopefully we wouldn't be approving new developments quite yet because
yeah.
We
yeah.
don't have that, you know. We're in this weird position of trying to deal with all these old situations in a way that helps
I get
them
it.
And helps us.
I get so. It. We're there. We're you're. I get it.
Questions legally, what can we do, and are we on safe ground charging standby fees in a very early process and giving some commitments or some indication that they have something of value? We almost need to for the survival of the district and to make our plans for the future, but I personally think the safest time to do it is at the time of will serve or at the time the impact fees are paid and to get your money. But that doesn't work financially for the district.
So what we're saying is really is once COBABE's up and running and we know what the volume is, then we can move those feasibility letters right into will serve letters. Right?
Well, the will serve letter generally comes once the permit's ready to be done. That's when they come in and pay their impact fee. Everything's done, everything's approved. Then the county calls me and says, okay, so-and-so needs his will serve letter. And they come in, they pay their impact fee, and I give them the will serve. The whole process is done before they even hit us. The feasibility is what they need to in order to do the permit, saying,
okay.
Yeah.
So I guess I misspoke when I said we wouldn't necessarily
know. Okay,
like
I'm just,
yeah.
I'm wanting to be clear.
We, you know, just as a developer
right.
standpoint, yeah, the feasibility is what we need to actually get the lots platted
right.
to be able to sell the lots.
It makes everybody proceed. The will
yeah.
serve is the
mm-hmm.
final step.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's important to not give the will serve letter out too soon
no.
because then when things do happen, someone has a bankruptcy, everything falls apart,
mm-hmm.
but there's like this will serve out there that's like the really final commitment that...
I get it.
Yeah, so we like to give those out literally like right before they're going to...
It's the last step in the county
dig,
process,
you know,
the
okay.
will serve.
Got it.
So on reservation or standby fees, so I looked at that a little bit. I think the state ombudsman had some cases that he had worked on, and it appeared that you could collect those. Again, you need consistency in the law or in your rules. And I don't know, Blake, I talked to you a little bit about that, and you said that you'd felt one time that there had to be consistency in the district's rules.
Right.
To
I mean,
it,
if the person that is getting the letter and paying the fee understands that doesn't give them the right to the water, it's just
right.
allowing
the
you
policy.
To prepare. If that's in the policy and that's clear to them,
yeah,
then legally you're in a really strong position. It just has to be uniformly applied and consistent.
So would that happen then if we had a form that somebody filled out in order to get their feasibility letter that indicated all of those
yeah.
things?
Absolutely.
Or
absolutely.
Clearly,
that
would
they
be on safe ground at that point?
Hold that
yes.
as a record.
Hold that as a record.
Absolutely. I would feel comfortable.
So going back to the question of allocating water to feasibility, we can do that when we build the COBABE well, right? We just say, okay, we have, I mean, Carrie told me the number the other day, you know, 100 more connections. We can just say, okay, and these 100 are covered by, hopefully, the COBABE well, and we'll hang on to that pending development. Does that work?
Along with your other commitments, that's why the agreements that we have with Summit are important, that we review those contractually, make sure that we're okay. But we just have to be very, very careful in how those commitments are made and or that they have had prior approvals and make sure it matches the resource. If the resource is not there, then you'll have to figure something else out. Otherwise, it commits the district to go make to develop those resources.
No, but that's what I'm saying. The resource will be there
when we build the well, when we finish the well, mm-hmm. and we could either allocate incremental water to, for example, Summit, or hang on to that water for the existing commitments, the existing feasibility letters and platted developments and people who are going to be paying us standby fees.
That's correct.
Everything will be a lot more clear when we have our well in line and we actually know what we've got.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get to that point.
So is that something we have to agree to do or should agree to do now, or is that somebody's got to go look at a whole bunch of stuff and then we can agree, come up with a strategy for how feasibility maps to service and infrastructure?
To go along with you on that, Trustee Erdang. So, uh-huh. Rachel, you've made a presentation today. What is the action that we're looking for, Roy? Is there an action that we're looking for here, or are you just basically making a presentation?
I wasn't asked specifically, but I think the direction is probably sufficient here.
Yeah, I think
I think that you, mm-hmm. if you take the direction that everyone kind of seems on the same page today and put together the policy or the form or whatever, and then we can bring that back for formal approval.
That would work. So if the board's agreeable, then we would create the process and the forms to looking at with the attorneys to make sure that we have a legal process in place that allows us to sign people up at feasibility, preferably, and start getting the reservation or standby fees, and then we'll clarify that in our development procedures, make sure that those are all consistent with all the forms.
So you want to be careful and make sure that it doesn't give them any rights that run with the property, because a lot of times properties will go into foreclosure and these things are well out in advance. I mean, the feasibility letter, I mean, Roy just talked about the fact that it could be 10 years. I mean, you get a feasibility letter. So you just want to lay that all out in your procedure, and you also want to make sure it's really good in your agreement so that when they're signing, they understand, hey, this doesn't give me the actual water, doesn't give me the actual service. It just means that I am paying because I intend to develop this property, this lot, and I needed to have that to start this development. And so I needed the feasibility letter to do that, and I've signed this agreement, and I'll be paying this fee so that the district can go ahead and plan and start developing the resources so that when we get to that point, I can get that will serve letter and we can move forward. But if I somehow, for some unseen reason, go into bankruptcy, it's not going to run with the property, it's not a right that continues to run with the property, and it's not an actual right to service.
I understand. I'm good.
Yeah.
Mark, do you have any opinion on this? Or?
No, I mean, I just, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask the question here or not, but how well do we actually understand outstanding commitments based on really Michael Moyal's questions last meeting? Do we understand the commitments well enough to know what is truly outstanding?
Yeah, I think we do. We're getting to that point. There are other landholders or people that have properties or they're wanting to build things that are in the district, but I've just told the ones that I've talked to that you'll have to bring infrastructure. It's not available. There are prior commitments that will consume the resources, but in your planning, you're going to have to drill a well, get water resources, plan for additions of the sewer system, but there are no other commitments to you as a raw piece of land waiting to be developed. You're going to have to come in just like Summit's done and build the infrastructure so that you can have your property developed.
So do we have kind of a simple spreadsheet that says these are the number of commitments, this is how they're allocated, mm-hmm. and this is the volume we have available currently in terms of our ability to serve?
Yes, I think we're within maybe one or two ERUs.
Okay.
Yes. And the big question, again, it'll all help this be very short, is that crazy cold bait well.
Yeah.
When it's up and running and producing, and we know what that delivery is, that will be everything. But other than that, Truthfully, Mark, there's probably Sundown, Powder Ridge, and possibly whatever Mike might have. Banjo Boys, I think.
Banjo Boys, yeah. There was
that little piece that's
evidently
the structure. That's really about it.
They were granted a total of 5, and they were only paying for 2, but they came up with paperwork that says they were originally granted 5, so there's 4, 3 of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
Things that are coming out of the woodworks we were not aware of.
Yeah, well, that's my concern, is the things that we don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we pretty much have a pinpointed. There's no other land out there.
That's really about it. There is one parcel that's potentially could develop, but they have no commitments from us, or could we ever give them commitments?
Right.
There are other areas within the district that I'm surprised that are in the district that possibly could be developed over on the Cache County side, but I don't know. You know, they'll all have to do the same thing as Summit's doing with the infrastructure bill.
Right.
Okay.
It's a whole different world than these few commitments that we have. But the nice thing about it is it gives us clarity, allows us to start collecting the standby fees. It's substantial in income. What do you decide, Carrie? 100?
Almost 200. Well, it was about 37,000 a month, between 30 and 35. So what, 200 a year?
Yeah.
And then also in along with that, and we'll talk more about the Eden Heights property. There was a commitment on 350 lots there that doesn't indicate that we would not charge standby fees, and we'll talk about that, but that could be substantial too. Based on the policy of the board and the direction they choose, and that's why this is very critical.
Right.
So, but,
Just one quick question. In the recap, I didn't hear how feasibility is going to map to availability. Did you say that and I just missed it? You know, how once you get a feasibility letter, you know you'll get water, as opposed to you're in line to maybe get water, but you might not?
Yeah, it would be explained in the contract or the agreement or the form that they'd sign up on. That allows us to start planning for that infrastructure or resource, but they would not actually be able to get service, actually get raw water, until it's available and the infrastructure is there, and that would be a time of will serve.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. Who would ever do that? I mean, who would ever say, sure, I'm going to work on this with some open-ended, you know, it seems like since we're going to have enough capacity to be able to say when we issue a feasibility letter, here's your water, or alternatively to say, here's your feasibility letter, we'll have water in 5 years and not before that. I see those two scenarios as being okay, but this intermediate one doesn't seem like it makes any sense to anybody about anything.
Well, you're right, and the indication from the feasibility letter would be that whether we actually have it available, whether it's going to be years out. The thing that's different about this is that we know the parcels that are out there that are wanting resources and what's feasible. So it's not necessarily a shot in the dark for the developer. We know what's there. We know what we can serve him and at what time based on development of Cobabe. Anything beyond that, Summit has their infrastructure and their resources. Anybody else will have to bring resources and infrastructure. And so the feasibility may be, yes, you'll be in the district, but you will have to develop a well and add to our sewer system, and we would analyze the costs and everything else, and we'd say, yeah, it is feasible to serve your property, and here's the ways that that'll happen, or here are the conditions.
Okay. So specifically on Cobabe, we're going to drill the well. We're going to evaluate, you know, what its capacity is.
Yes.
And then based on that capacity, are we going to let's pretend for a second it's enough to cover everything you've identified and are now going to charge standby fees to. Are we going to hold on to that extra capacity, or are we going to ship it to other customers who might want it per that development agreement, you know, and possibly not be able to cover our obligations 2 years down the line or 5 years down the line?
Well, it's a limited source. The customers that are, as Rachel indicated, have a contractual claim or reason to, because they were previously in the district and previous to any agreements made with Summit,
that in the contract or the agreement said that we would take care of those, and everything else beyond that is committed by agreement to Summit, any surplus. So there are no, how can I put this, there's no other way to give water to anybody else. You have the existing users that have a claim, and you have Summit, and that is it.
Right, right, that's what I'm saying. So, but these existing users are both folks who are currently connected using water.
Yes.
Folks who are paying standby fees, and folks who we forgot to charge standby fees to, that are now going to pay us standby fees. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So then feasibility letter just means, and that includes the, sorry, the platted stuff, the stuff that's platted already, all of those
correct.
Guys.
Yes.
We'll get water and we'll hang on to that water so we can give it to them before, you know, using it up and sending it somewhere else.
That's correct.
Okay, got it.
And that's why they need to pay those feasibility fees up front, or let us know that they do not plan to develop, and we will give those to somebody else if they're available, or they would go strictly straight to Summit.
Yep. So in terms of feasibility letter process, there is no more feasibility letter process other than Summit or drill your own well, right? There's nothing else.
That's okay. It. Yep.
Unless someone came forward with a really clear plan of developing their own source, and then
that's right.
We give them a feasibility if they're in this, if they're in our district, and
that's right. That's the next plan is if they come in with resources and development paying those expenses, and they're in the district or they propose to come in the district, then it would be feasible to serve them.
Got it.
Yeah, I think that was always the problem. Is feasibility and will serve were convoluted, and it created some confusion for our operations.
Does there need to be any more discussion on this, and what will somebody articulate what the direction to staff is from the board?
Okay, just make a recommendation, please. Possibly on a motion. That would be that the trustees would allow us to work with our legal counsel to develop whatever that form might look like to protect us legally, and also look at our development procedures. And also the counties, and that we develop that process and bring it back to the board for final approval in the next meeting.
Board, are you, and I'm speaking, Mark, I got a kind of a soft nod from Mark over here. So, Trustee Barrett.
That makes sense to me, Jim.
Okay, Trustee Erdang.
Yep, sounds good.
So, let's just go with that, and if you'll bring that back to the board in our next meeting, that'd be great.
Perfect. Thank
you. Is there anything else on this particular item? Because I'm ready to move on.
Thank you.
Good. We're going to go on.
Critical.
Thank you. We're going to go on to item E on our agenda, which is the manager's report. Roy, if you'd just start with number 5 and go down as we discuss those, please.
Okay. I'll get to that real quick. One of the challenges we've had is having board meetings on Mondays. And I think, Bob, you've mentioned the concern about having the information sooner to you. Typically, if we're getting ready on a Friday, trying to get that out to you, it just creates problems. It's easier if you need Monday sometimes to just make sure all the business is in place and everything's taken care of, give you a little bit cleaner board meeting. We're suggesting that possibly that the board pick other dates. I think looking at Commissioner Harvey's schedule, and he's probably as busy as anybody, but probably the Tuesdays. Was it third Tuesday? I think your secretary said it was the best.
There's a couple of them in the
The third. It wouldn't be in the morning because we've got.
No, she's got.
There's
on
some
here.
Dates
Thursdays
on there.
At 2:30. The first Thursday at 2:30. First, second, and fourth Fridays from 9 to 10, or the third Tuesdays at 2:30. They'd be in the afternoon, not in the morning.
Yeah, it's under item 5, I believe. If you or 6, I think both 6. My glasses on. Under 5, there's some proposed dates, item 5 in your packet.
Okay.
What works best for the board? Would you be willing to consider another day for a board meeting? And
this is for your discussion.
Yeah. For me, end of day or absolute beginning of the day works best, because having this fall in the middle of the day and coming down from the mountain really disrupts my day.
Okay.
So, but other than that, I can make just about any afternoon work with enough
Seems like afternoon would be better if we started sometime earlier in the afternoon, 4-ish. That way, we wouldn't eat up most of your day. But that way, if we had a public hearing, we could just lead into the public hearing.
That works for me.
Everybody else?
Likewise.
Yeah, that's great.
So
does anyone want to? What is 2:30 too late? Too early? Are you good? Does that conflict with our?
Probably 4 would help.
Shouldn't conflict with our executive at CVB, should it? That's Mondays.
Yeah, that's usually Mondays.
Okay.
So what if we went later in the day? If you did a 4 o'clock meeting, let's take typically an hour for our board meetings.
Yeah. So we'd go
3:30 would work.
3 o'clock.
And then we could go right into public hearing after that if we had to.
Yeah, let's go 3 o'clock, and then that works out. That's a good idea.
That way you plan your afternoon, you know where you're going to be, and it doesn't mess with your schedule and life too much. So we would need a motion to change that. If it's up to you, if the board's willing to do that, we would.
I'll entertain a motion.
On third Tuesday?
Yeah, so I'll make the motion. We move the meetings to third Tuesdays of the month at 3 p.m.
Second.
Third Tuesday at 3 p.m. Okay, I have a motion and a second for the third Tuesday at 3 p.m. Is there any other discussion? And I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Gary? Trustee Erdang?
Sorry, aye.
Oh, great. Thank you. Great. And Commissioner Gibson, by the way, said he had to step out here. So we'll call that unanimous for those board members still present here. Thank you. We'll move. Roy?
Six. So we know that we've needed some policies and procedures for the district. Rachel has been helping to prepare those and actually sent us the complete draft now.
The personnel.
And there are a number of policies that the district needs. They need Government Records Management Act. We need records policies, personnel policies, training policies, purchasing policies, travel policies. There's a number of those that we want to implement, and that'll all be a part of this pack. Plus, you have your bylaws, which affect the trustees, and then a lot of the other operations and responsibilities of the district that are actually a part of these too. And so, Rachel, I don't know if you want to talk about.
Do you want me to speak to this?
Since she's prepared those. Okay.
So I have started, and what I have, it looks like it's already in your board packet under tab 6. Mm-hmm. I have bylaws. I have chapter 1 as being board members and management. That's what kind of talks about, as for board members, the most important thing you might be interested in is compensation issues. And then for the manager, it's what really delegates authority to the manager to do day-to-day operations, which is great, so there's no question there. Chapter 2 is a travel policy. That just tracks both trustee and employee travel. The primary thing that might come up for is if you're going to conferences and stuff, what gets compensated, and that just tracks the state rules. And then chapter 3 is the one that I just finished this morning, and Carrie was good enough to get it into the binders in time, is the personnel policy. That's a requirement, a state law requirement, that all districts have a personnel policy. So this is one that I've taken from other policies that I have for my other districts. The unique situation here is that I realize I don't have any sample personnel policies for super small districts, and the way employment laws work is that a lot of the state and federal laws only apply at certain thresholds. For instance, FMLA doesn't apply unless you have 50 employees, and certain other discrimination type laws only apply if you have 15 or more employees. So I took a policy that I had and pared it down to just be what is, I think, a little bit more essential for you guys, and not including all those added protections. It's not to say that we're encouraging harassment and all that, but I don't want to put that in there and bind you to something that's not actually law that applies to you.
Yeah, that's great.
So that was my quick overview. Now going back to the beginning of the bylaws, I'm just going to point out a few things that you might want to be aware of. And oh, for all of these, I don't know what you want to do today. My suggestion is you might want to adopt these today, and then when all of you have had a chance to go through and Roy has a chance to go through and maybe make particular edits, you can always come back and modify them.
You're not asking us to
read
it. So you're not asking us to approve it and so that we can know what's in it.
That's what I was saying is up to you. If you want to wait, I just know that there was a concern about getting policies on the books, but of course my preference would be that you guys have read it before you approve it.
That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fine with me. It's just, my thought was that there was a concern about getting things approved now. But anyway, let's see. Board members and management, one thing I want to point out here is there's the discussion about board compensation. And what I've put in there now for your annual compensation is what is occurring now, which is, roughly $416 per board meeting, which equates out to be roughly the $5,000 annual cap that state law has. Now, I've talked to Roy, and apparently he's been in discussions with LeGrand Bitter. He's the executive director of the Utah Association of Special Districts, and he's suggesting that cap is not intended to necessarily be a take that cap and divide it by how many meetings you have per year, and that the intention is more to be roughly around maybe $100 a meeting. So that's going to be something you might want to discuss, I don't know, this time or another time. The other thing that I put in there to make sure, we're just trying to make sure, like Roy has said, you don't have a target on your back, that you're taking compensation excessively. And so one other thing I put in here was the note, and this is what something a lot of districts do, is that you only get that monthly compensation for board meetings you actually attend, and you're not going to be paid for meetings you don't go to. So again, I don't know if you want to approve this today or think about it, but that's kind of the big thing there on that one. Personnel policies, back. I rushed through them all and now I'm going back to them just to see if there's anything I particularly want to talk to you about. New law this year, I think it was SB 70 if I'm remembering correctly, requires each district to have human resource management policies in place, whereas you're already required to have personnel policies. I think that it's intended to be the same thing, so I think you're covered with that. But it also is requiring that each district to designate someone to have human resource management duties and to receive human resource management training. The UASD is intending to provide that training going forward during their annual convention. So my suggestion and the way I worded it here would be to appoint Roy as that person because he will be the boss.
I'll have to give him my annual review anyway.
Exactly. And this is actually a win by the UASD. I know you guys contribute membership fees to that organization in part because of their lobbying efforts. This is one of those instances where they did a really good thing for districts. The original bill as drafted required every district to hire an HR manager, regardless of how many employees you had. And so that might make sense for districts that have, 50, 100 employees, but you guys have three. And so if you're gonna hire a whole new person to manage three HR people or three employees, that was just ridiculous. So anyway, now it's just that you have to at least have someone appointed to be in charge of knowing what's going on and and get training on.
Well, have the respective training for such things so they don't get us in trouble.
So I added that in there. Along with the personnel policy, as I was drafting it, there's a lot of specific ticky-tacky things that I just kind of put in. But you may want to, Roy especially may want to go through these and see how he wants to do things. For example, like sick leave and vacation days, how many days do you want to give? How do you want that to be, accumulated? Stuff like that.
Yeah,
so anyway, if you guys are willing to wait and have some chance to digest this and approve it next month, you can do it that way. That's up to you. But that's just my brief explanation of what's been done so far. As Roy mentioned, there are several policies you guys will need. The other one that I had intended to have done originally was a procurement policy. I was LeGrand again had explained that the UASD has a draft purchasing policy on their website. And they've done it this nifty way that you can adopt this resolution that says basically we adopt the purchasing policy that's on the UASD's website as that may be amended from time to time. So it's actually Mark Anderson who maintains that policy. And so whenever he updates it, anyone who's adopted that resolution will automatically benefit from the updated policy, and it helps out small districts that maybe don't have an attorney to be able to be crafting purchasing policies all the time. So we had talked about doing that. The reason I stopped is I talked to Mark about that, and he was saying that that policy is woefully out of date right now, the one on the UASD website. And he said that until you adopt a policy, you're just subject to the default state rules. And in his opinion, the state rules right now are better than the policy he has on the UASD website. So I said, just hold off on that one. And it's on his plate right now to update that this year. So I just put a hold on that just for that reason. But I mean, you're welcome to do that if you want to in the future. Still just go ahead with adopting your own. Or if you want to wait, I leave that up to you. But that's why I didn't complete that one yet. But those are some of your big ones. Your purchasing policy, your personnel is absolutely required. You're also required to review your personnel policy annually. That's the only policy that has that specific requirement in code. And districts do that different ways. Typically, just bring it up on a board agenda once a year and make sure someone's read through it and make sure it's up to date and have a motion on the minutes showing that you reviewed the policy, and that should be good.
I was going to suggest something also along with these policies is that we have, since we're going to have LeGrand involved with this anyway, but maybe we could have the Special Districts Association, whom we pay those dues to, they would provide the service of looking at all of our policies and procedures, conflicts of interest, or any other missing rules or regulations that we should have. And they train on that all the time. He would probably be as good a source as anybody. And wouldn't cost the district a ton of money because we pay dues to that organization. He could come in and provide us with that review and make sure that we're getting doing things right. So.
You know, Roy, I completely agree with that. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here, these policies and procedures. Some of them were sent to us on Friday. Some of them just got into our inbox today. So I'm uncomfortable approving these at this point. I would suggest that we have an opportunity to review them and perhaps communicate electronically with Rachel any concerns or suggestions we may have on these policies that have been promulgated. But springboarding into your comment, I think it would be a terrific idea to get somebody involved that can help us prioritize any potential compliance issues that we may have. I mean, it's incumbent on this district to maintain ethical standards, avoid conflicts of interest, all these sorts of things. And I think a thorough outside review to help us prioritize where we need to focus our energy would be something that I would wholly support.
I like having it some kind of a external auditor, so to speak, not necessarily formally, but through your
association.
Association. Someone that can do that.
Yep, he could very well. Yep, that would be great. Yeah, he could do that.
Trustee Erding or Trustee Scrotell, your thoughts?
I agree.
I agree, and Trustee Erding?
I agree as well, and just a more general comment. Looking through the bills this month, you know, you guys have made huge progress on getting us compliant on a million things and getting understanding where we are, but we're spending a ton of money on attorneys and consultants and stuff like that. So I'd like us to try and get compliant relatively inexpensively as opposed to kind of staying at the same run rate of getting compliant, if that's possible.
Okay, we'll do the best we can on it. I think you're gonna see some upfront expenses as we get the initial drafts and everything done, but yeah, I agree. Once these get in place, it'll make a big difference. It will not be that expensive to do updates and. But we'll use LeGrand as much as we can.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, very good. If there's I'll entertain a motion that we table this for a month for time to review. Sorry to make the wording right in your mouths.
And then also if we can get the approval to get the Association of Special Districts to provide that review or audit or whatever you want to call it, we'll do that.
So I'll make the motion that we table the discussion of policies and procedures while we have time to review the draft and recommend that we use the Special Services District Association for the review and recommendation on drafts or the draft policies. So.
Boy, what a fantastic motion. Almost word for word. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we've got a motion by Trustee Squirtell and a second by Trustee Erdang. If there's no more discussion, call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously with the four of us that are still here. Okay, we'll move on now to item number 7.
Okay, as you see, there's two dates there, and that was based on whether the board changed board meeting dates or not. So we're looking at the 19th will be the date for the hearing, public hearing, and that'll be, of course, later in the evening on the impact fees. The engineers have been working on those as well as Zions Bank to get the numbers where they should be. We provided some information in your packets. You can review the impact fee analysis. I think that Bob had some concerns possibly about some of the numbers. I did initially going through it. We do not have the actual impact fee numbers in there yet. That's coming from Zions as we speak. The big thing for us was, and those will come, we'll get those to you as fast as we get them, but the big thing for us was the meeting dates, get the hearings and start getting the notices out because they have to be done very specifically. And then once the after the hearing, then let's see, Rachel, is it 90 days after before we actually can adopt them? Blake, I don't know that. It's 90 days after they're actually adopted by the board. You still have to wait until there's some time allows developers and other people to come in and raise concerns and things, but after that then you can adopt them. And then we pass those on. And then and I think there were some concerns actually further on in our discussion about the collection of impact fees, and Carrie'll help us on that when we get going in her process and collecting. But I just more than anything wanted to let you know about that. That'll all come up in our next meeting then on the 19th. And if you have any other concerns about the numbers or anything in the studies, please let me know and we'll get those to either the engineers or to the Zions Bank, who's doing the analysis and the setting the rates and they're running the calculations for us.
Okay, great. Any discussion on that? None being heard, I don't know that that requires a motion. So we'll just move on to item number 8, unless there's discussion. Great, item 8.
Okay, there was some discussion in our previous meeting about the request for proposals from an engineering firm to start on the water line for the Kolbabe well and those updates. And so they asked me to take a look at that. There's a couple of things that came up as we looked at the law and selecting engineers. The law doesn't allow you to hire anybody based on price. You can only do it based on qualifications. I don't know what the district did and when they selected their present engineer. It indicates that an RFQ should be done and you look through qualifications. So I asked Paul if he would send me an update of his qualifications as a firm, as well as his rate structure, so that we have those on record. But if we were considering hiring anybody besides him, there's no question his firm's qualified, but we'll get those qualifications in writing. But if we were to hire anybody else, and I think it might have been suggested by Bob to install that new water line and maybe install the upgraded tank as indicated in our master plans, that you still have to consider the requirement for requests for qualifications. And I never did find this. I asked Paul about how that might happen, but he said, well, you can only keep them for up to 5 years, but I didn't see that in the law. And we did include that law in there in the books. But you'll see that it only allows you to hire them based on qualifications, and then you negotiate prices afterwards. And if that doesn't work out, negotiations don't work out, then you can go to the next person.
So we can only hire based on qualifications.
Yeah, and it also would increase your costs because your existing engineer, if we kept the same engineer, then he would be looking, doing the review of the request for one, as well as who's actually doing the work. So then you're doubling your expenses. And so I don't know that you'd save a lot of money. The board just needs to be very comfortable with your present engineer. It's probably something that a bigger organization would use because they'd have multiple projects going on and just merely have somebody managing those projects. They have their engineering department managing them, and they would have a number of projects, a number of engineering firms working on those. Probably for a district like ours, one engineering firm works fine. You'd have to also bring that engineering firm up to speed on everything that we're doing. Wouldn't be hard. Those guys are all qualified, most everybody out there, unless you're a terribly small firm. But just to let you know then, I don't see any value in it other than if you want to follow that procedure for your present engineer, and if you feel like you're not getting a service, you are out of your engineer, then we would go look for those qualifications and go out for a request for them and look at another firm, possibly.
Yeah. I mean, it was a real eye-opener to realize, and thanks for your help here, Roy, that you don't actually pick somebody based on what price they're going to charge to do a specific scope of work, that you're not able to do that, and that I'm sure that was a terrific coup from a legislative standpoint for the engineering lobby.
It was.
But having said that, my perspective on all this at this point is that Paul Hurst is our engineer. And we do not need Paul Hurst and CRS. We need Paul Hurst to perform the engineering analysis on this terrifically important engineering project and to charge us what we're comfortable being charged based on his qualification. We don't need to be subjected, if you will, to both engineering charges from our own engineer and engineering charges from an engineering firm.
So you're saying one or the other, not both?
I'm saying Paul. Paul's our engineer. He can design this system. He's qualified. We know what his rates are and what his work is about. Paul should be able to put together a design.
Well, the design is already done, from what I understand, or a lot of it.
No, not at all. A design's been done on the well, not on the requisite pump stations that are going to get the water up the hill and the piping to the, presumably, to the existing storage tank.
I think that's probably right. We have the rough draft, kind of the rough review of what the cost might be just based on footage and things, but an actual physical drawings of parts, components, measurements, surveying, all that stuff still needs to be done.
Okay. So what's your pleasure? What do you want to do here, board?
So this is just the water line, or this is the water line and the pump stations?
This is just the water line, as well as the enlarging of the reservoir at Ridgeline. That was called Ridgeline. Powder Ridge.
Powder Ridge.
Powder Ridge. You want to call it Ridgeline?
Powder Ridge.
Powder Ridge.
Got it.
Yep. But that's
still.
Well,
how's the water going to get up the hill?
Well, it would be from Cobabe all the way up the hill, and you'd have to design the pump station, the booster stations, as well as the water line and size.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. It has to be done.
Okay. Does this new?
What can you tell you?
I don't know what to. I don't know how, what to. Does someone want to make a motion, or do we? What do you want to do on this? I will entertain. I'll entertain a motion or a suggestion.
So would the motion as Bob's described it is tell Roy to design this as part of his job and not charge us X. Oh, sorry,
Paul?
Tell Paul.
I can do it.
To design this as part of his job.
That's okay.
Sorry, Roy, you can do it too, which
I can do that.
A lot
sure.
Less expensive. to tell Paul to design for part of his job. So Bob, make the motion of what you want.
Okay,
Well, I'm not sure this is actionable. I mean, it, based on what we're talking about now, I don't know.
I don't know either.
So then are we saying, talk to Paul, decide Paul is qualified, negotiate the rate for this with, you know, using Bob's input, and dump him if that rate seems to be an awful lot like going outside and hiring anybody else. We don't save anything.
I'm going to jump in here. That might be a good idea, is to just let's see how things go here before we take any official action, and then back with a report after that's happened. Would that be all right?
Yep.
Or feel good about that. Is there any opposition or any more discussion on that idea?
No.
Okay, let's move on then to item number 9, impact fees for Summit.
This is, as I mentioned, there was some continuing conversation about the timing of collecting impact fees and or impact fees. And Carrie deals with this on a more of a day-to-day basis, and this has been a real concern of hers about some of the lots we did not collect impact fees, and I'm not sure I understand why. It's just all previous to me, but some did not have them, some did, or we never collected impact fees.
Well, it depends. The impact fees are generally done at the will serve letter. And with phase one, because it was prior to me coming in also with Summit, I don't know if there was an agreement. I don't know how it worked with, because right now we're gathering impact fees as the lots are developed. And so basically the developer didn't come in, pay the impact fees. We need a policy. How is it gonna work? Because those impact fees could go on for years not being collected with all those outstanding out there. So it's basically policy. Do we collect them at the time of the development? Do we collect them from each individual owner 20 years down the road? Because right now, as far as Summit goes, we're collecting them from each one of the owners on phase one. Phase two is coming in, standby fees, impact fees. How is that all going to take place? I mean, it's just, we need to have something in writing so that I know, as these people call me, we got another phone call this morning, that, you know, construction's starting. So how are we going to deal with this? Basically what it boils down to.
So,
Summit, by virtue of the fact that they're bringing water and presumably sewer to the table, satisfy the impact fee requirement, right? What we're really looking at are standby fees and connection fees.
Yeah, so and it's probably when the impact fees actually completed, we'll actually know what the numbers look like. You know, the engineers are feeling like there's some money that need to be collected for impact fees. And we'll see what that is. For the most part, for Summit, it's a pass-through. They're providing infrastructure and resources. I think there is something on the sewer, possibly, but we'll see what those are. And I think, listening to the board, impact fees are collected at the time of platting, when they know there's a development coming along and a will service letter is about to be served. And I believe that that's the way our development process is written right now. So I think I'm comfortable in that going forward. Previous lots did not get an impact fee charge.
In phase one, we're collecting from each one of the owners as the contractors come in, or however that works.
So we could look at it with the attorneys. We're looking at the total development process and making sure we're doing things right. I don't know, Mark, if you have any input on any of this.
I don't.
What's going on?
I think maybe if you can loop Don into the conversation, and maybe Ann, and just see if we can get the history on it, because I don't know the history either.
I don't
need
to me.
See if you can understand what the intent was and draft a policy so everybody knows.
Okay, we're going to meet actually with Don in Nevada
tomorrow
to talk about reservation fees that haven't been paid and that need to be brought current, and we'll bring this up as a discussion.
It's a long ways to go for a meeting, clear out to Nevada.
Yeah. So we'll clarify that possibly with them, and as we review these policies and our procedures, we'll just have to bring that back to the board and try and do something that's very clear. Again, you just see Carrie's frustration, not knowing what to tell people. It makes it difficult for her, but also it exposes the district to liability if she's collecting those at the wrong time or telling people the wrong things. And so, again, it's all part of that procedure
And the other critical part is that we have an impact fee approved, that we haven't had that. It's hard to collect them if you don't have a study and the actual public hearings and everything that allows you to do that. So possibly in the next meeting may be the best time to deal with it all. But she's got standby fees. If we develop that process, we're assuming then standby fees would come on as we give feasibility letters. I'm not sure what worked out with Don also. If we have a number of lots that we could give feasibility letters on, it means they'd have to start paying standby fees for those. But we could work through that process too with him and the attorneys. That's okay?
You're good on that.
Carrie, mm-hmm. Okay. Is that okay with the board? You're okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Then let's move on to item 10, discussion or action on sewer lagoons.
And we probably want to talk about this one in closed session because of the potential for litigation on this, if that's okay.
We can do that in closed section.
Go into closed session for that item.
I'm not entirely sure what discussion.
Let's just move.
Sewer lagoons.
Let's hold item number 10 for item G.
Yeah, you have Blake review that one, so I don't know.
Pending or imminent litigation.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll wait for closed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Item number 11, discussion and action on developmental procedure revision.
So actually in your package, you'll see there is a revision. And currently, based on what our needs are, that revision would meet our requirements for the most part. We realize that there's possibility we'll have to adjust that some. If you look at number 11, you'll see the procedure that we have, and let's see, that's the 2016. Do we have a current one, Carrie, with it, or is that?
No, the only thing that we changed, we switched number 2 and number 3 around, so that you actually got the feasibility letter before.
Okay, I was thinking we had something else to that one. Okay, so that's the last date that had been revised, is September 12, 2016. We're suggesting, we just made a couple of changes on it. Again, if you'll point those out.
Okay, so we switched the process number 2 with number 3. They were backwards. We added down on 4D, we added impact fees are due. Then the district will issue the following will serve letter before the will serve letter was issued.
So proven so process.
Right. And the district engineer on F, will guarantee, do the guarantee bond at 100% of the construction cost, and this is where we've asked for a couple of fees, because you'll notice that on the second page over where it talks about the design review fee, task 3 and 4, we changed that from 3 to 3.5, but it didn't specify dollar amounts, and so that's where we come in with the schedule of fees, where we're going to put that in place once Paul gets us fees, and we're basically going to hold them to those fees versus whatever. So that's kind of where we changed most of that right there.
Yeah, and again, this is that process that we were talking about that's important for Carrie to have this in place as people come in and approach her and I, to give them a very clear process to follow
of
the fees and when they're to be paid, as well as these feasibility fees we were talking about, and give them that standard application to get them signed up. So this is the process. We'll look at this again with the attorneys and maybe make some additional adjustments. But we felt like from looking at the previous process that the district had, that there's not that many changes. We would suggest, I guess, that you would adopt this. Well, I think there will probably be there'll be further revisions as we go along in all of this someday. But we do need something in place right now so we can be moving ahead in some type of a legal, formal matter. Any questions on that process?
I don't have any questions.
So, just a simple one. Was that in the packet? Because I don't think I see it.
Under tab 11?
It was right behind. We skipped, and so look in your packet right behind the Durham, Jones, and Pingar. It should be the page right after those three pages right there.
Okay, hang on.
Developmental review and approval process.
All right, maybe. My computer's a little slow. I'll let you know if I can't find it.
Okay.
But we do need something in place that's meets what we're doing and this does. Do you feel comfortable? Do you have any other questions? Do you feel comfortable in making a motion on that, or do you want to study it further?
Trustees, what's your pleasure on that?
When do we anticipate the AMBAC fee schedule to be completed?
This month, for sure.
It's got to be for public hearing next month.
Yeah, so all that has to be in place. Everything else is an existing fee schedule that the board's already adopted. It's just the impact fees need to be included. It gives you more of a timeline of how things will happen when people come in requesting a development procedure.
Any discussion or action do you want to take? What's your...
I guess the only discussion is if we're going to change it based on the discussion we had earlier, shouldn't we just wait till we change it? That's not discussion. You guys already said that.
Well,
These are the changes we talked about.
Okay.
Previously, the application, okay, the standby fees, mm-hmm, impact fees, and when you get the will serve letter, those kind of things. We've highlighted, you see that those are bolded to make sure you see when those are going to happen, as well as the timing of getting drawings to the state, Department of Drinking Water,
gotcha,
inspection. Okay.
So in that case, my comment is even more trivial. I swear it's not in this PDF.
It's not in mine either.
Hold on, I'll get it to you.
I guess we could go on while they're waiting for those, and we could deal with the others.
Okay. Let's go on with 13 in the interest of time. Or 12 or 13?
On 12.
Yeah, 12.
Okay, so this is fairly lengthy. I don't know if any of you had a chance to look at this, but this was something that we were waiting for. We had our water regulation, rules and regulations. This is the wastewater rules and regulations that myself and the engineer have gone over. A lot of it's kind of almost boilerplate type stuff. There's some items that are highlighted that we've changed, but other than that, I'm not sure exactly. I don't think you want me to read through this thing. Basically, the first part is just the definitions, and then you have your rules in here. And again, if you look at some of the highlights, those are the changes to what was possibly boilerplate. But these need to be in place. The district needs rules and regulations for its sewer system.
Trustees, do you want to go over those rules and regulations, item number 12? Do you want to go ahead with a motion on those that they are needing them in place? I'll entertain a motion if so, or if you want to review them, what's your pleasure?
So you're saying you do not want to discuss what size particle is okay for commercial grinding operations in food service?
Yeah, that's what I said. A lot of these were more or less like a boilerplate type. Some of those things will apply, some are not.
It looks okay to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as an amateur.
Yeah, probably Mark would be the most seasoned to know what to include. Some of these highlighted pieces in the very back, some of these were actually went with that. I'd question whether we probably, that's the only part that was questionable. On pages 40, 41, 42.
Yeah, Mark, are you okay with using dry weight, or do you want to use wet weight for the particle percentage?
Oh, boy. Is there any other discussion? If so,
no.
I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt. As is the wastewater rules and regulations.
I have a motion to adopt the wastewater rules and regulations from Trustee Barrett.
A second.
And a second by Trustee Erdang. Is there any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is that a resolution? Doesn't look like it on the thing.
Yeah.
It is. So but it's a resolution. Carrie, will you call out by name, please?
Trustee Churchill?
Aye.
Trustee Barrett?
Aye.
Trustee Yerding?
Aye.
Trustee Harvey?
Aye. Motion carries unanimously by those in attendance. Great. We'll move on to item 13, a discussion and or action on the revision of the water rules and regulation.
Okay. And the same thing with these. Now these have actually been the water regulations have been gone. We've been through those much more extensively. Let's see.
Are you good with these?
Yes. Yeah.
These is that are, your recommendation?
I'd recommend that we approve these. These are in much, much better. They're more true to the way things really are. I might mention on the sewer regulations. Probably as time goes on, we will also be working on improving those extensively. But we do need some regulations in place. We have nothing.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Been recommended by our manager that we approve them.
This one's just an update, Carrie.
That's just the update. The water has already been approved. There's just a few things we changed in there, so you're just gonna need to approve the changes.
Yeah, I don't know if I've highlighted the changes either.
I move that we approve in regulation.
I have a motion to approve the rules, the wastewater rules and regulations. I have a motion to approve the revision of the water rules and regulation. Is that correct, Trustee Barrett? Item 13. Trustee Barrett, did I understand you correctly? You moved to approve the item 13.
Yes.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a second by Trustee Scortell. Is there any other discussion? Is that a resolution or is that just an approval?
Just a revision. We have the resolution.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. I heard them all. Thank you. That passes. Item number 14 is a discussion and or action on hiring Blake Hamilton with Dunn Jones and Pinniger as a permanent legal counsel.
In our discussions last month concerning the sewer lagoon lease, the board had asked if I would, talking with the chairman and the vice chair, suggested that we take a look at that lease and start to do something with it, knowing that there was an imminent danger there and we needed to renegotiate that agreement. So I just had indicated that I could find, I knew somebody that could do that. And so I contacted Blake Hamilton with Durham Jones and Pinker. And so he has reviewed that. That was the initial contact with Blake. And again, he'll provide some of that review as we've gone on. I also talked to Rachel in long-term responsibilities for the district about the fact that probably with the challenges that we have that are coming up, I feel like that it would be best to have his skill set for the district. We would still keep Fabian Vancott on board to provide us with assistance on other legal matters, but Blake would be more of provide more of the one-on-one work for the district. I think that would be better for the district going forward. Their office is just a block away from the district office. It would be a little closer for us to have meetings. And I feel like that skill set would be helpful for the district right now.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
I would echo what Roy said. We talked about this last Friday. And it sounds like Blake, like Roy says, has the skill set. Might be a little bit cheaper than my firm. And also as being local will be key, I think. Mm-hmm. And we'll have the bandwidth to really focus on these issues, whereas I have a lot of other district obligations as well. But I told Roy that we would of course be happy to continue helping on any matters that may come up. Our firm definitely does have, some really good expertise in local districts and special service districts. You guys are being a local district, but seems to be an arrangement that would make sense.
Yeah, so we thank you, Rachel. We've also included the contract. I think it's in there, isn't it, Carrie? Yeah, you see it in your packets. There's the agreement to work with Blake. And since he's already started and that's actually been signed, as discussed with the chairman and the vice chair, we would need that agreement ratified if the board would be so willing to do that. And any concerns or interest in this change?
I don't have any concerns. If is that your recommendation?
It is. I think it's best for the district. It's really just all business. I love Rachel and the work she's doing and everything in their firm. But I believe with Blake's understanding in his abilities in court, his understanding of contract law, working with districts, there's a number of issues that are going to come up. They're going to be hot topics, and I think that background is going to be helpful for us going forward.
Okay, board members, if this is Roy's recommendation, I'd like there to be some action with regards to that. So can I get a motion, please? I'm sorry, I can't take all of you at the same time simultaneously.
I move that we... Go ahead, Mark, you're up for a motion.
I move that Mark make the motion. Great.
I move that we accept Roy's recommendation on hiring Blake Hamilton and Dunn Jones and Penninger as a permanent legal counsel.
Can I... The name is Durham. I don't know why it's in the...
Great. Super. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Incidentally, we have a motion and a second. I was going to make a snide comment there, but I'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Is there any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you. We have a treasurer's report before we go into closed session.
Okay, we had just a little advisory this morning. We had Jen in from Zions this morning, real quick, to sign another signature card. We have three accounts now. We have one that's general, one that's impact, and we opened another one for the bond so that we can keep all bond proceeds separate from regular, general, all that other fun stuff. So just a heads up on that. So what I've done is I've transferred the majority of the funds from Wells Fargo over to the new accounts at Zion. So right now there's only a balance of $7,300 in Wells Fargo, just to make sure that nothing tries to come through until we have got the reconciliation done. And then once the reconciliation is done and we know that everything is processing through Zion's, we will close Wells Fargo. So with that being said, Zion's right now has $88,639 in the general. And I have moved all of the balance left in the PTIF account to our new impact account with Zions so that we can start using those funds, which left us a balance of $23,000 in there. And then the other account that shows $50 was just the bond. And I have submitted the invoices to be for the proceeds, but they haven't set the proceeds yet. So until that happens, there won't be anything in there. And in the PTIF account right now shows $244.43. I released two liens last month and put three more on. But since that, I will be releasing the other three that I put on because we have now got payment. So there should not be any there's outstanding liens that they refuse to pay, but we're good on the liens. Everybody's current.
And okay. I mentioned also we'll meet with Summit.
With Summit tomorrow.
With their... accounts receivables, accounts payables, and we'll resolve. There's quite a large dollar amount that's due, and we'll resolve that.
That's actually a great report, Carrie. Yes. Thank you. That's a good report. Questions? Trustees? Questions at all? No questions being recognized. Then I'll entertain a motion that we leave item F and go into adjourn our meeting and go into a closed strategy session or a closed meeting to discuss items that have potential legality to the district. Is there a motion? Trustee Erdang.
I make that motion.
I think Trustee Barrett, it's your turn for a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Then we will be in closed hearing. Thank you.